report of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable David Gilbertson presiding, is now open for the transaction of any business that may legally come before it.
Good morning, and welcome to the October term of the South Dakota Supreme Court being held here at Mount Marty College in Yankton. The court would note the attendance this morning of students from Beresford High School, Centerville, Hinton, Iowa, Westholt, Butte, Garrettson, and Cedar Catholic. As you came in this morning, you might have noticed some publications in the lobby. We have several that you might find interesting. The gray-covered book is a synopsis of the terms of the cases that we will hear this term. Gives you approximately a one-page summary of each of those cases. Also tells you a little bit about the justices and how our system works. The second book is a photographic history of the South Dakota Supreme Court, just recently updated a couple weeks ago. And the third book with the blue cover is a written description of how the South Dakota Supreme Court decides cases. All these are available in the lobby. Help yourself. The first case for our argument this morning is State of South Dakota versus Matthew Duchesneau. For the appellant, Matthew Duchesneau, is Mr. Darren McGee of the Office of Minnehaha County Public Defender from Sioux Falls. And for the appellee, State of South Dakota, is Mr. John Stroman, an Assistant Attorney General. Mr. McGee, you may proceed, sir.
Please the court, counsel. My name is Darren McGee, and I represent Matthew Duchesneau, the appellant in this case. What I'm here today to ask is for the court to allow Matthew to elicit testimony concerning the defense of general necessity in his trial for possession of marijuana. We want the court to allow him to present evidence so a jury of his peers can decide whether or not he was justified in possessing and smoking marijuana on the date that he was arrested. The reasons for this request that we're basing it on is one, Matt's physical condition, his medical history.
Mr. McGee, could you, for the benefit of the audience, just give us a real brief factual summary how this case gets here?
Certainly. Matthew was at the Jazz Fest in Sioux Falls back in 2001. He was feeling that a spastic tremor was going to come on, which is a result of his quadriplegic. He's a quadriplegic from an auto accident in 1985. When he feels a tremor coming on, if he smokes marijuana, he can relieve the symptoms of that. These can be very violent. They can throw him out of his wheelchair sometimes. If he's sleeping, they can throw him out of his bed. He was feeling this coming on. He went about 200 yards away from the Jazz Fest crowd, and with the aid of his assistant at the time, he was emptying his urine bag as well as smoking marijuana. The police officers that were patrolling the festival crowd smelled the odor of marijuana, saw him over by the trees away from the crowd, came over and arrested him.
So your client concedes he possessed marijuana and he knew what it was?
That is correct, Your Honor. The facts are certainly not in dispute as far as what happened on that date. There might be some minor quibbles as far as what was the actual testimony of trial, but there's no doubt that he did possess marijuana on the date in question.
What penalty did he receive?
I believe he received 5 days in jail suspended. It was obtained illegally. He has gone through a lengthy process, which he was prepared to have testimony from a doctor in Sioux Falls, a Robert Seidel, who would have testified that he had gone through the proper channels to obtain marijuana through a federal program. He was unable to find a pharmacy to help him distribute that marijuana. He had actually gone through all the paperwork, the legal stuff, but the security measures that a pharmacy would need to distribute that marijuana is very, very lengthy and was also costly, and he couldn't find anyone to distribute that. So he was forced to obtain the marijuana through illegal means.
So the doctrine of necessity here would apply to the way he obtained it plus the actual possession.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Right.
Did he have a certificate from the federal government that was offered in evidence that said that he had that he had those rights?
That was never offered into evidence.
Well, how can we assume that it's true, then?
Well, at a pretrial hearing, the Honorable Judge Wright Pell, the magistrate judge who heard this, there was a couple of hearings, and there was extensive briefing done by the attorneys. And in those offers of proof that were made through the attorney that was handling the case at trial, that was, you know, made as an offer of proof.
Was it received in evidence?
It was not. What was offered but never received in evidence was a note following Matthew's attempts to get marijuana legally. The doctor, I believe Seidel from Sioux Falls, wrote him a note that said Matthew was a quadriplegic. He uses marijuana to control his tremors. It wasn't an actual prescription from the doctor. It was on a prescription form. It was just like a handwritten note.
Mr. McGee, what requirements or what threshold requirements would you anticipate that the court would need to go through prior to making a decision on whether it should be presented to the jury as a defense?
Well, I think it would be a sort of a natural extension of what is now the necessity doctrine just in general, as it's stated in STCL 225-1. I think the court can use some of those guidelines and principles in determining, one, is there a legitimate necessity? Has this person sort of exhausted all other remedies in order to treat his medical condition, you know, really? And is the harm that's done by possessing the marijuana worse or less than the harm of breaking the law?
How many other states would allow this? In your research, did you find that out?
I have researched it. I don't have an exact figure for the court. I obviously will concede that it's a minority of states that allow the defense of necessity for the possession of marijuana.
Are you limiting your argument to the statute, or are you asking us to expand that in some common law theory of necessity?
I think we can go strictly off of the actual statute itself. 22-5-1 is a general necessity in many different areas, as this court has found in kidnapping, assaults, all sorts of different crimes. There's nothing in the statutes that specifically says marijuana cannot be used under the guise of a necessity defense.
I'm curious to know what Marinol is. You say that in your brief, you mentioned that he has a prescription for Marinol.
Correct.
Is that marijuana in a pill form?
It's my understanding is it's a synthetic form of THC, which is the active ingredient in marijuana.
So he did have a prescription for that.
He did.
He had a possession, and I think on the day of his arrest, he had possession of that, and he was not arrested for possessing that.
Correct. The problem that Matthew has is that the legal drugs that are prescribed to him, and there are a large number of them, Valium, THC, or Valium, Marinol, and the other drugs, have side effects that are very, very dangerous to Matthew because of his medical condition. His liver and kidney functioning is very sensitive, and having to process and filter these drugs through the liver and the kidney making it very difficult for him.
Could you have some medical testimony that smoking marijuana is less dangerous to his health than ingesting it in a pill form?
Yeah, he was prepared at trial to have Dr. Seidel come in, as well as an expert, Bierman was the last name, to come in and explain to the jury, give them some background on what he had done leading up to possessing the marijuana on that day and why he needed to do it. We were prepared to have experts come in and educate the jury on what exactly his reasoning was for having that, and let the jury decide, well, you know, is this a justification or not?
And Dr. Seidel would have testified that smoking marijuana is a safer method of taking it than a pill form?
In his case, yes. In his case, he was prepared. That was what he had actually, that was what the handwritten note on the prescription pad was. It essentially said, you know what, this is a better way for Matthew. Maybe not for everyone, but for Matthew, this is what he had done, and this is what he had tried, and this is why I recommended him to seek out alternatives.
Did Dr. Seidel put in, or did you make an offer of proof?
There was an offer of proof made on several different occasions at pretrial hearings, as well as actually the morning before the trial.
Now, a necessity defense generally requires the that you're forced into doing something because you're confronted with two evils. You don't have a choice, essentially. But what I just heard you say was that, that this is simply a matter of one may be a little better than the
Well,
that's what I just heard you say about the doctor. So if the doctor's just going to say, well, this is a little better than the other one, is that really a necessity as the traditional concept has been used?
Well, this
is normally, if someone's about to be shot and killed and they defend themselves, that's a necessity type thing. But you're talking here about a matter of degree where, as I understand your argument, it's just that something might work a little better than something else.
And I think that's true. It certainly is a quality of life issue for Matthew. There's no question that he has tried everything that he can legally, and he is able to function better. He's able to handle his symptoms better. He is able to avoid some of the dangerous side effects from the legal marijuana. Now, the issue that you're hitting on, I think, is a good one, because there's no doubt that if somebody was forcing him to take medications or to do something that was causing him some lethal and dangerous side effects, that were causing his kidneys and liver to break down, if they weren't controlling the actual symptom of these spastic tremors, there's no doubt if someone was making you do something like that, that he would be justified in saying, hey, I don't want to do this. This is hurting my body. So I think, yeah, the way the program needs to look at this is from a standpoint of what the effect is, not necessarily what the cause is. In other words, the effect is the same whether he is forced by someone having a gun to your head or whether it's somebody saying, this is what we're going to use to treat you. He doesn't have a choice. He has to do what he needs to do to get by on a daily basis.
But the statute requires not just force, but unlawful force. How do you explain away that?
Well, and I think it's a similar way, as I think it's the result.
Well, if somebody holds a gun to your head, that's unlawful force, isn't it?
Certainly.
But what do we have here that's unlawful about the force that he's experiencing?
Well, it's the condition that he has, these spastic tremors, that cause very, very serious, can be very physically harmful to him.
Okay. I know, but it's not unlawful.
But he did not control the situation that put him there.
How do we read a word out of the statute that's in there? You're trying to get us to read into there an involuntary force.
Correct.
But how do we do that?
Well, I think if someone's using something unlawful against you, the very nature of that is that you don't control what's happening, okay? The term unlawful means something that's sort of beyond your control. At least
unlawful means unlawful, illegal.
Well, I think I understand what the justice is saying. My feeling would be that there's, at least in this case, the results to his body from the legal drugs create something that's akin to an unlawful force against him, because he ends up in the same sort of situation as if someone's forcing him to do something that he doesn't want to do.
Okay. Isn't that a question that you should raise with the legislature to expand the word unlawful force to also mean an involuntary force or an unwilling one?
I think that's something that can be done and perhaps should be done. And I think one of the things is, if you look across the country, this is an issue that, while it's a minority view that allows medical use of marijuana in a necessity type situation, it is an ongoing debate. And I think specifically in our case, our legislature has not precluded the use of that defense given the statutory structure that we have.
Who's to decide whether there's a necessity, the person themselves or a medical doctor, or are we being asked here to draw some lines?
Certainly, I think it's actually up to the jury ultimately, but the judge as the gatekeeper of
well, let's back up a minute. Say that the person is in Mr. Duchesneau's condition. Can he make that necessity decision on his own? Does he have to go to a doctor and the doctor says, I agree that necessity mandates you smoke marijuana? Who is going in the first instance to make this decision? Ultimately, it'd be the jury. if there's a criminal charge, but if there's no criminal charge, obviously we would have to define who's going to make the necessity decision.
Correct. And was it? I think a doctor would definitely have to be involved in the process under any reading of the statutes and the case law, anything like that. This isn't a situation where we're going to ask the court to open up the gates for somebody to come in and say, I've got a bad back, I need to smoke marijuana because of my bad back. Unless there is a medical doctor that's willing to come in and testify to that, and that still leaves the state a chance to say, you know what, this is not correct, and this is what the experts are going to say on the other side. So I think ultimately you have to have some medical testimony to support your decision. And I think in this case, that's why this is such a compelling issue, is he has done everything that he can do. He has gone through the federal system. He has gone through the legal drugs. And this is what he ends up with, is an illegal substance that helps him control his medical condition better than the legal alternatives that he has.
Let me take you back to the legislature for a minute. As you well know, in our system of government, this court can only interpret the law and make the law. The legislature has the responsibility to make the law. The briefs that you guys have submitted in this case reflect that on these two occasions, the legislature has looked at changing the law and declined to do so. Now, we might speculate what their reasons might be, but since the legislature has apparently dealt with this issue and rejected it, how can we as a court adopt such a position?
Well, I don't think they actually took any action on the recent in the recent legislature.
Well, bills were put in the legislature to allow this, and they were unable to pass them through the legislature. Doesn't that tell us that the legislature has essentially rejected this?
Well, I understand what the justice is saying. I think specifically in this case, the legislature has not made any determination on the use of marijuana under the necessity statute. I think it's very clear from Oakland cannabis buyers and the majority, or the Justice Thomas's opinion in that case, said that there cannot be a necessity defense if the legislature has made a policy decision. You know, in that case, they specifically said marijuana is not a medical, you know, you cannot use marijuana medically under the Federal Possession of Controlled Substance Act. Here, I think you have a case where specifically in a list of the Schedule I drugs, marijuana is excluded. THC is included as a Schedule I drug. The legislature made a conscious choice to say, except for marijuana in its natural and unaltered state. So I think here you have a legislative decision to actually say marijuana is not going to be included in the Schedule I drug. And a Schedule I drug would have no medically accepted use in the United States. But they specifically said marijuana is not going to be included in the Schedule I drug. So I think what that leaves is us able to apply the general necessity doctrine using marijuana because it hasn't been precluded by the legislature.
But again, the legislature on two occasions has declined to adopt a bill which would have permitted this.
The fact that they didn't adopt a bill to permit it doesn't mean that it's precluded either. And I think you have to read especially the Schedule I drugs as saying that, because why else would they exclude marijuana from being a Schedule I drug? I don't think you can read the statute any other way except for to say the new THC was going to be included as a Schedule I drug, and the new marijuana, or they specifically excluded marijuana. So I guess I think I understand what you're saying. I guess I don't think that they've precluded the use of a necessity defense because they haven't acted on those bills. Had they acted on those bills, I think there's no doubt, one way or the other, if they made a legislative determination that specifically said that, then I don't think we would be here.
Could it be that it's not a Schedule I drug because, as far as I know, illegally acquired marijuana is not a pharmaceutical that you can buy or control or regulate, to my knowledge anyway.
And I think that's correct. However, there is a debate going on across the country that wants to recognize marijuana and some of the beneficial effects that you can get from that. obviously, until our legislature, I think, makes a policy statement of this is the way it is one way or the other, I do think there's some gray area. And I think that this is one of the gray areas, because if Matthew can convince 12 jurors of his peers that indeed he does obtain benefits from this drug, that indeed it is better than the alternatives that he's facing, then I think he's certainly created a question for the jury to determine whether or not he was justified in his possession and use.
So there would be no hard and fast rule. We would have to take each case on an individual basis and let the jury decide whether the necessity defense applied to that individual person.
I think that's correct. I mean, obviously, the trial judge would be sort of a gatekeeper for that, just like it is now. It doesn't say in the statutes that it's illegal to kidnap somebody unless, this certain criteria meets. Yet, this court has said there are certain times when we will allow a necessity defense to be presented to the jury.
You have a little less than 2 minutes.
But the point with that is, it's up to the judge and the jury to sort of, the judge has to filter whatever is legitimate versus not legitimate. I think you can create criteria based upon the case law that's out there as far as when somebody's justified or when they really face a true necessity. And that's what we'd be asking the court to do. And I think in some cases, the defendant's going to have an easy time meeting that burden, as in this case, I think, given his history. I think in other times that you're not going to be able to meet that, and I think the judge and the jury is going to be able to see that very easily. With that, I just ask the court to allow Matthew to put on some evidence about his necessity for possessing marijuana. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McGee. Mr. Strong, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Chief Justice, Court, Counsel. I would like to first address a few statutes and facts that the state believes are particularly pertinent to this case. First of all,
I'll just back.
Excuse me, Chief
Justice. Do you agree with your opposing counsel that there's basically no factual disputes here that are material?
I have one, Your Honor, that I wanted to bring to the court's attention. In the state's brief, I say, the record didn't reflect whether or not he had a prescription for Marinol. And then I said, I believe the sentence afterwards, and I don't think he does. Okay, I want to stand a little corrected on that. I'm really, to this moment, still not sure, because I do not believe the record that I reviewed reflected that there was a prescription for Marinol. I didn't see any testimony of that effect. The only thing I saw was at the end of defendant's brief, was a partial unsigned letter that set out some facts about the case. Now, I had made a request of defense counsel, and last week he submitted to me the entire letter opinion from Magistrate Rappel. And so I saw that it was signed or whatever. So I believe there's good reason to believe that Magistrate Rappel was under the belief or made a factual finding that there was Marinol, but I don't find that in the record as of this time.
One other question on the facts.
Yes.
Wasn't the officer's testimony that when he approached, I believe on a bicycle on the bike path, that he observed smoke coming from the individual that was with him also?
Justice Sayers, the facts have that actually the defendant and another individual, a 10-year-old boy, are down by the river at the Jazz Fest, just a little bit off from the Jazz Fest. And an officer, a reserve officer, riding his bicycle by, notices a dark-looking cloud, and I believe as a result of even smell, then begins to suspect that there's maybe marijuana. He then calls additional officers.
Wasn't there one other person there besides the 10-year-old boy?
The 10-year-old boy, the defendant, and a friend of the defendant.
Right. And was there any testimony that there was smoke coming from the friend of the defendant?
Yes, I believe so.
They were both smoking marijuana.
Yes, they both admitted to that.
All right.
And then there was, as I recall, don't the facts also relate that the friend who was smoking with Mr. Ducheneau claimed that it was a medical condition he was treating also with this marijuana?
Both individuals who were smoking marijuana did make a claim that they were doing it from a medical necessity.
Was the friend arrested?
I believe so.
And what happened to his case?
I am not familiar with the result of his case.
Was it shown that it was all the marijuana of the defendant? In other words, if there's a necessity defense, is there a necessity defense that would go to distribution?
You know, Your Honor, I believe that is a very, very important point with reference to a potential common law approach to this, because if this court were to find that there is a general necessity in this case, there also, it assumes that there is also some defense, or in essence a sanctioning of an otherwise illegal conduct of distribution. And so I believe that that causes a whole additional problem.
Was it established in the record that this marijuana was owned by Matthew?
Yes.
And not by the friend?
Well, I believe he acknowledged it was his and he had it in his possession. He did do that.
Yes. So what you're suggesting is there would be immunity if this doctrine were recognized in this case all the way up the chain from the consumer to the pusher to the person that flies it in from Colombia, because they're all involved in an activity that will end at Matthew's doorstep.
Absolutely, Chief Justice. And we have SDCL 22-42-6, where our legislature has said that the law prohibits possession of marijuana.
Well, wouldn't the necessity defense only go to the individual that's being charged in possession?
I believe so.
Not up the chain.
Well, it would obviously anyone who could potentially be convicted.
Doesn't necessity indicate that it's an individual reason that you are supporting the necessity?
Justice Meyerhanger, I think if we look at that necessity statute, 22-5-1, Justice Sabers, I think, hit it exactly in the bullseye, because it requires unlawful force upon him. And the facts of this case do not show anywhere that that takes place. There's unlawful force that needs upon him. Because if we start down this road, then does the heroin addict then, are they able to say that at a time where they're having a terrible withdrawal, I mean a psychosis withdrawal, that we are going to okay them to take some heroin to keep themselves from maybe killing someone or something else? There is no unlawful force upon here. And I really believe that the primary issue to this case is not whether marijuana has medical value or not, but frankly, who decides that? And Article 3, Section 1 of the South Dakota Constitution empowers our legislature to enact laws that preserve the public peace, health, and safety of its citizenry.
But aside from the statute, are we not permitted to consider defenses that are not in the statutes?
That are not in, excuse me?
Right. If the legislature has not recognized a particular defense, are we still permitted to recognize it in the common law?
I believe in the common law, yes. I believe we're looking at a medical necessity case. I think the defense has tried to couch this as a general necessity case. It is a medical necessity case. That is what has been brought. As this court has said in State v. Cohn, this court didn't recognize it in case law nor by statute. The common law, yes, there is, but the common law, and I will refer to my citation of State v. Tate out of New Jersey, common law defense is unavailable because the defendant fails to satisfy necessary prerequisites. And in addition, common law defenses have their base in public policy, and public policy is that of the legislature as to whether the use will be prohibited or not. And so, Your Honor, I believe there's a place here for the judicial restraint involved, because the common law intuitively is a policy type decision. And as this court has stated, it is not the function of this court to inquire into the wisdom policy necessity or expediency of the legislature. And
we have an obligation, and I mean, certainly if the legislature did not recognize self-defense in homicide cases, we would have an obligation to recognize it in the common law, would we not?
I believe so, Your Honor.
And we do know there's quite a controversy about marijuana, but I believe there's quite a bit of medical evidence that marijuana does alleviate suffering, especially for people who are suffering from terminal illnesses, and perhaps for this man as well. Is that the kind of compelling issue that we ought to take notice of, even if the legislature has decided for reasons of its own to not tackle it?
I would believe not.
And why not?
Justice, because I believe that area of public policy, as this court has even stated, is left with the legislature. They are the ones who take the facts in. They are the ones who resolve. They have decided that there is no basis for one to possess marijuana. Defense counsel, when they were up here, the appellate stated that there's a determination on whether the harm would be worse or less. I don't believe that's the determination at all. That's not what necessity, as the appellant stated, they were interested in the necessity by statute. That's not what it says. One cannot speed down the interstate and say, there's nobody around, so it doesn't matter. And I'm going to be late for a meeting. So the harm is very little, so it's okay. And I believe that's what we're hearing here. And if you look also with reference to necessity, the necessity defense talks about, as Justice Sabers pointed out, this unlawful attack upon you. That very reasonable people say, you have to defend yourself, okay? We have an unfortunate situation here with an unfortunate defendant who is a quadriplegic, as it's stated in the page 51 of the transcript, as a result of an incident where he was intoxicated and had an accident and resulted in that. But what I find difficult is where this unlawful force is. When this individual goes to the Jazz Fest, he states on the record that page 63 that his spasms will increase when it's when the heat's there, and that's one of the reasons he kind of went down to the river. We don't see him calling an ambulance where he got out in a hot situation like, oh man, I'm going to die. And, this terrible, fearful thing came upon him. Instead, what we see is a defendant who chooses to not use the Marinol, but has a preference to smoke marijuana, go down to the river with another individual and a 10-year-old boy present. They smoke marijuana, and then after he's arrested, because this very dangerous situation he believes he's in, physically, after he's arrested, he then is booked, bonds out, and returns to the Jazz Fest. So I think if we're even looking at a common law concept, we're trying to make a policy decision here, factually, this just doesn't fly.
But wouldn't that be a decision the jury would have to decide? I mean, isn't that what we're discussing here today? Do we get past the gatekeeping role of the judge and allow the jury to make those very decisions that, based on your arguments? Because normally we're fairly liberal in allowing the defendant to present the defenses to the jury. Now, whether he's going to convince them, that's another story, but
yes.
What's the difference here in allowing him to present his defenses or his reasons for what he did?
Thank you, Justice Murray. That is very good, because this court has stated that with reference to affirmative defenses, there is not a great burden prior to bringing it. I think that the real issue here is not the concept of general necessity. I am not saying that general necessity could not exist in a marijuana possession case. I'm not saying that. Because, as Justice Sabre said, or if the scenario was such that an individual had a gun put to their head and said, look, you hold on to this bag of marijuana, or I'm shooting you. Okay, there's a possibility for a necessity defense. I really believe that the issue we have before the court today is one of medical necessity. That is what the defendant has presented. In page 6 of his brief, he said he was talking about testimony that would have come upon,
and that testimony was stated that Mr. Ducheneau had exhausted all legal alternatives to his treating and of his medical condition before moving on to medical marijuana. That is the issue. And this court has stated in State v. Cone that it does, that there is not a recognized medical marijuana defense. And since our legislature has stated that it prohibits the possession of marijuana, I believe judicial restraint prevents us from saying we're going to make a policy decision of our own on an individual one-by-one basis of each case. And so I don't believe, Justice Meyer Henry, that the issue gets to the jury.
Tell me about the offer of proof in this case. As I understand it, there was a hearing scheduled at which time there was going to be an offer of proof made. But as I understand the record, it wasn't actually made.
Your Honor, Justice Zinner, I read Magistrate Rappel's entire letter brief when I received it from defense counsel, which part of it is in the back of appellate's brief. There's a huge amount of facts there. There's all kinds of facts setting forth the difficulties Mr. Ducheneau had, the claims of how toxic he has decided certain drugs were. The record itself is void of that. It's void of that. There's nowhere in the record where you're going to accept Mr. Ducheneau's testimony, but you're not going to get expert testimony as to all the effects in here. The only thing that I can see that happened is that when there was that hearing, there was a stipulation made by the state when defense counsel did not bring the experts there, and the magistrate was concerned about that and said, well, I have 2 hours here to take testimony. The state said, well, it'll stipulate about his medical condition. And it went on for clarification on page 5 of that transcript said, the state said, I'm not stipulating that marijuana has medical benefit or any medicinal benefit. And so then the opinion comes out from Magistrate Rappel that sets forth a huge amount of facts setting forth the medical benefits of marijuana. So personally, I believe to this day that the record is still void of those facts.
Well, where did Judge Rappel get those facts?
I have an opinion that those came from defense counsel's memorandum brief, but the record
There's no evidence on the record to this.
I do not see any, other than when the defendant testified himself at his trial, he made some comments about not liking certain drugs and how marijuana did help him. Again, Your Honor, I really believe that the primary issue here is not the determination of the value of marijuana, but who decides that. And I believe earlier when there was a comment about whether this issue has been before the legislature itself, it was the 2001 legislature that determined that it wasn't. They were in both cases set to the 41st day. I believe there was a determination, actually, a 9-0 vote. I believe this is an issue for the legislature to decide the policy, that they will take the testimony. They will determine if its effects. And to this day, the determination they've made is set forth in 22-42-6 that it's illegal to possess this. That's not even scheduled as Schedule 1 drugs. You cannot have this. And I do not see an exception for self-diagnosed pain relief. Any other questions from the court, Chief Justice?
I believe not. Thank you, Mr. Strowman, if you've completed your presentation.
Thank you.
Mr. McGee, you have 10 minutes, sir.
I guess by way of clarification, as far as what the record says or doesn't say,
Appendix A of my original brief, I did include for the court the findings of facts made by Magistrate Judge Rypel after hearing some evidence as well as having extensive briefing from both defense and the state. I did not include the entire decision because I didn't think that her legal analysis was something that the court needed. If the court obviously wants to take a look at that entire opinion, I will certainly provide that. I don't intend to mislead the court nor Mr. Stroman. But it says right in there that she had briefs, had an evidentiary hearing. In the briefs, it was mentioned, and that's where her finding of facts come, as far as the effects of the legal drugs that Matthew was taking, as well as how marijuana helps him.
You're saying there's no transcript of this hearing? Is that where we're relying on the judge's decision to establish these facts?
Correct.
Okay.
I don't know if there was ever any findings of facts done at that stage of the proceedings or not.
Well, Judge Rypel must have thought there was some sufficient evidence because she did conclude that there was a medical necessity defense here.
That is correct. And obviously, since, to be candid with the court, obviously since she found in our favor, we have co-opted some of her arguments into our presentation today.
But my question still is, where did Judge Rypel, what evidence did she have to make this medical necessity finding? As I understand it, the doctors didn't come to that hearing.
No, the doctors did not come to the hearing. In the actual briefing that was mentioned by Mr. Stroman also, there was I think the brief that was submitted by counsel at the trial was probably a 20-page brief outlining the conditions that Matthew suffers or has to deal with. That's how she came to find those facts. It was through a written brief. The state got a chance to respond to that. In fact, the state even said at one of the motions hearings that they will, essentially stipulate that the medical testimony as laid out in that brief is accurate. So that's how she got to finding of the medical necessity. The offer of proof was renewed at the beginning of the trial after it had gone up on appeal once and got returned. The offer of proof was made. I don't think a further offer of proof had been made by counsel at the trial because her findings in the actual letter brief, she was very familiar with this case. I don't think she needed to hear actual live testimony based upon what she had already read in the briefs.
What happened to the other individual's case, the one who was apparently smoking marijuana with your client?
You know what, Your Honor, I don't know what the result of that was either, but I would like to address the idea that somehow this necessity defense would go all the way up to somebody who was distributing or something like that. You couldn't make a claim of having a necessity defense unless you had some testimony to back that claim up. You know, it's not just a matter of saying, you know what, I've got a sore knee, I need to smoke marijuana. That's not what we're dealing with. We're dealing with somebody who has real live symptoms, real live problems that are related to his quadriplegia. We're dealing with an individual who has exhausted all other attempts to help him cure this. And this is the best thing that he can do. He's gone through all the medical people. He's gone through the federal government. He's tried to do the legal things. He's been unable to get the relief that he needs. This state prohibits possession of marijuana. It also prohibits kidnapping. It prohibits assault. It prohibits a wide range of activities. But you can still use the necessity to defend if it's appropriate. And that's what we're asking the court for here. We're not asking the court to come up with some brand new scheme or some new idea. Obviously here, the necessity is medical. So this is a medical necessity case.
Well, how about the person that's selling marijuana? Does that give him immunity for possession and distribution because he's selling it to a person who needs it on the basis of necessity?
I wouldn't say that's necessarily the case, Chief Justice Gilbertson. I think that you have to take a look at that, but I don't think that it would provide the provider with any sort of defense. I think it would have to be the user who has the necessity that would have the claim to the necessity defense.
Well, how can it be legal to possess it by one person, but not then legal to possess it or sell it to the person?
Well, I think part of
the consumer.
I think part of it would be, what is that, the provider, what steps has he taken to make himself available to the defense? You know, has he done some research, investigation, things like that? Is he doing this for the reasons of medical issues, or is he doing it just for the sake of getting some money in his pocket? I think that's would be a difference, but that's not the issue here. I don't know how the law would treat the person who sold the drugs to Matthew, but I don't think the court needs to make that jump. I think you can look at the facts of this case from Matthew's possessing the marijuana and decide whether or not the necessity defense is available to him.
Let me ask you about the language of the defense that you'd like to have. The statute requires unlawful use of force, and you're asking for something different. Today in argument, several times I've heard you use the phrase, this wasn't better than the alternatives, or it is the best thing he could do. Now, is that the language that you're asking us to adopt as a medical necessity defense?
I think in the necessity defense, as far as nationwide in the common law, as well as contemplated by statute, you always end up with a choice of means. Somehow you're doing something for a reason that's sort of beyond your control. And that's how the defense of necessity comes about. Now, this case is clearly that choice of evils, and that's what we'd be asking the court to adopt, sort of an extension of the already existing necessity defense, whereby his possession of marijuana, his use of marijuana, is certainly much less harmful than the public harm of committing the crime of possession. So I guess I'd come back to it'd have to be a choice of evils. As far as the specific language, I think obviously you have to be careful because you don't want to open it up to any sort of medical condition. But at the same time, I do think there is a legitimate expectation that you should be that this defense should be available to you.
Well, that's exactly the reason for my question, because you seem to be asking us to allow it in this case where the evidence simply shows that it's a better alternative or it's the best he could do. Yet, I don't see evidence in this record saying he was required under the circumstances to take this.
Well, I think that's where you get into the testimony from the doctor in Sioux Falls, Dr. Seidel, who had actually written the handwritten prescription or handwritten note on the prescription pad. I think the testimony here would be much more compelling that not only is it just something that he chooses to do because it's better for him, it's something that simply is a better standard of living, or better, he has better results from the use of marijuana than he can get in another way.
You're entitled to 2 minutes.
So, obviously, it's. I think you're on point there. I just think that you have to look at the facts of each case, and in this case, he's done absolutely everything possible, short of breaking the law, before he ended up with the marijuana in his possession. One of the things that I would say is going back to the record in the statement of facts. I think the police officer testified at trial that he saw Matthew passing a marijuana cigarette to this other gentleman. Well, we know that that's not possible. So obviously not everything that's in that record from the police standpoint is 100% accurate as far as the facts of what happened here. He certainly did have marijuana on him, but as far as the other facts relating to that, he has a different perception than what the state's witnesses did.
One last thing I'd like to ask you before your time is up, just so I understand, are you asking us now to, when we deliberate about this, to enact a new common law defense, or are you asking us to interpret the existing statute and some new defense within it?
It would be the latter of the two, Your Honor. We'd be asking.
Not asking for a new common law defense.
Correct, Your Honor. We're asking you to interpret the existing statute in a way that it would allow him to present evidence and try to fit that into what's currently on the books.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. McGee. Mr.
Court will be in recess for 10 minutes. Invite those members of the audience during a 10-minute break. If you wish to pick up any of our publications in the lobby, feel free. We'll be in recess for 10 minutes and then have the next argument.